Now, the Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live.
It's a good Thursday. Thanks for being with us. We have the professor, Paula Bovin. We've not had Paula on in a long, long time. And I want to do a deep dive with Paula on Bobby Hurley. She put something out on her Twitter that made me want to get the professor on because, of course, having someone with Paula's knowledge of ASU, very important. Also, the overarching landscape. You ever want to be in sports? You ever like, man, I hate what I do. I'd want to do what you're doing, Brad, or what Paula's doing. Because Paula and I have known each other for over 30 years. And we're going to talk about how the industry is changing. There's going to be more layoffs coming up at ESPN here in the next few weeks, maybe even sooner than that. And how does she get that message across to her students? And much, much more. We'll chop it up with Paula Bovin. And then the Phoenix Film Festival is going to be in the Valley with three sports documentaries that are tremendous. We will have that segment for you as well. Opening comments brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. That is Desert Financial Credit Union. As always, we appreciate their longtime support. Want to start, actually, longtime support. Well, even before I get into the Suns and the disaster last night, I want to talk about Tim Hovick and Santan Ford and one of our partners, because today was a big day for Tim. I get a text message early this morning that Tim Hovick, Santan Ford, is on the stage at the New York Stock Exchange. He's at Wall Street and he's ringing the opening bell. How cool is it that someone from Phoenix, from Arizona, who has his dealership, that he's built it from the ground up, he's risen up through the ranks at Ford, is given the national worldwide stage to ring the opening bell at Wall Street, and then have a press conference afterwards to talk about all the things that are going on at Ford Motor Company. And Tim has been great as a friend, first and foremost to me through the years, and a supporter. So today, a big day for Tim Hovick, and we couldn't be happier for him in getting that stage today in New York City. That is so, so cool. All right, Suns. 46 to 20 free throws. Okay, and you guys, through the years, you know I'm one to say, I don't want to hear about crying. Don't want to hear about crying. I still don't want to hear about crying, but last night was egregious. You know, there's some video that is circulating around where D'Angelo Russell is saying, it's on Twitter, saying to his teammates, hey, it's Scott Foster out there refereeing. They know the history, the lack thereof between Chris Paul and Scott Foster. The credibility of the NBA, once again, is under siege. Monty goes off. I've never seen Monty Williams go off like he did last night. He just went right down the line. Will he get suspended? Will he get fined? Will fans offer to pay the fine? You know, that's what happens in situations like this. But here's the thing. This is, you've got nine, 10 games left. You're at Sacramento tomorrow. You have Philadelphia on Saturday. You're in a back-to-back. So everybody can gnash their teeth today. If you want me to come on and say the refereeing is horrible, that's pretty obvious. It is in all sports. But you know what? You got to fight through it. You got to fight through it. The owner, management, they're not going to sit there and tolerate a first-round exit. They're not. And Devin Booker can be frustrated. Chris Paul can say there's a lack of communication. Former head of the NBAPA, it's pretty strong coming from him. Scott Foster, when he referees games, how Chris Paul never wins. When you have 21 more points on the free throw line. But Monty did say, the Lakers had 21 more points on the free throw line. Monty did say after the game where they said, well, you're settling for jump shots. That's true. We have said, we have pointed out, you have to be more aggressive. So I'm not going to be the guy that sits there and honks the hometown horn today and say, well, you know, it's just the referee's fault. Standings are the standings. This is what you have to deal with. You have a game against Sacramento tomorrow night. This is not some who cares game in November. And I know that you're invested. I know you want a voice that's just going to sit there and agree with you on all this. I'm about winning titles. That's it. Scott Foster's not going to referee every NBA game in the postseason. You have to get past this. You just have to get past this. Yeah, they shot 46 to 20 on the free throw line. Yeah, that's bad. Yeah, that's borderline criminal. Yeah, you could even scratch your head, tilt your head and say, was the fix in? You can do that. That's sports. Unfortunately, that's where we're at in sports. But if you're going to sit there and just whine about it all day and all night, you have to play tomorrow. You have to get in the postseason. I'm not even that concerned about the, you know, the positioning with home court. Didn't impact the Warriors last year, did it? I mean, game seven, Suns, Mavs, didn't really impact. I mean, go right down the list of this home court really that important. You have to have that. So you can be wound up today. There's no question. Without that, without 21 more points in the free throw line, might be a game. Suns lose by 11. Might be. Don't know if the Suns will play well on both ends. Are they settling for the mid-range game? That is a very fair question to ask. You don't have DeAndre Ayton. You don't have Kevin Durant. You don't really have much of an interior game right now. Do you? Am I wrong on this? I don't think I am. I know I'm not. So I, on one hand, I totally agree with Monty Williams. On the other, it's just turn the page, get over it. Am I happy that he got wound up after the game? It makes for good theater. It makes you think the coach cares. Of course he cares. I'm not one of these guys like, oh, we have to have somebody who throws chairs. We have to have somebody who's firing them up. No, you don't. No, you don't. Just somebody who's able to get the message through. And if he felt like he needed to say something, then he did. Is he going to get accused of whining on this? I don't think he's whining. I think he just voiced his frustration last night. Now, if this goes into tomorrow at Sacramento saying, well, we'll see what the officials do to us tonight. Yeah, I have a problem with that. That's whining. That's whining. Please, let's be tougher than that in this town. Please, let's not sit here and go through hours and hours and reams of trees or sit in front of a computer screen typing up about how the officials have it in for Phoenix. We're better than that. We are. But I've heard it through the years. I've heard it. Let's not be soft. All right. Mike Bercovici. Mike Bercovici is somebody that is a riser in the industry of football. Berko had a nice career, I'd say, at Arizona State University, had a high football acumen. Went in the Alliance, got crushed in a game that made all sorts of highlights and went viral. Cardinals hired him. And you keep hearing Mike Bercovici. He just keeps going up the ladder, going up. And he leaves yesterday, goes to Carolina, goes to the Panthers. And they're going to sit there and draft a quarterback. And Mike Bercovici is going to be involved in all that. Sean Jefferson's a wide receiver coach now at Carolina. It's kind of becoming, Adrian Wilson's out there. Kind of becoming Cardinals West or East, right? I mean, for people who are saying, what's going on with the Cardinals? It's pretty simple. They're tearing this thing down. This is what happens when you have ineptitude, neglect, when you have meddling, when you have all the things that go on over there. This is the end result. But hey, man, we got all these views on Amazon. Look at us. We're on Hard Knocks. Hard Knocks. Look at us. Hey, did you watch Hard Knocks last night? Who gives a bleep about that garbage? Who cares? Well, I've got all these views. People care. I don't know. I think people care more about winning. Not winning press conferences. Not putting out, here's what the metrics showed on social media, how important we are. No, your team blows. Your team's an embarrassment. It is. They're an embarrassment. They bottomed out. Again. It seems to me that every so often they just find their way through. And then people like Bruce Arians say, you know what? I'm too old to attend. I'm going to go in the broadcast booth. I got to get out of there. Just, am I wrong? I don't think so. Ken Whisenhunt, I think it's just time to go. Time to go. They fire them or they move on, however you want to put it together. The owner over there, guy like Mike Bercovici, you don't want to get away, but you have a new coach that comes in. Here we are. Here we are. Here's how it's going to go, just so we're really clear on this. Either Kyler kills it and the team makes it to the postseason, which right now, you tell me, are they looking like a postseason team? The answer is absolutely not here in March. And then the calls for, well, Kyler's just not going to work here in Arizona. Go look back at what I had with Seth Joyner last week. Covered Jonathan Gannon in Philadelphia. Seth was on last week. He crushed him. I agreed with some of what he had to say. I'm willing to give people an opportunity and a chance, but he's got, you know, at the end of the day, he has this owner that's here, and this is who you're saddled with. And I do mean saddled. So I'd really like to see Ken Kendrick come out and say, we are going to be a player in the free agent market for years to come for every and any player. Why would I like that? Because he can't say Ohtani by name. Like today, Buster Olney tweeted out that Ohtani is going to get over $600 million when he's a free agent at the end of this year. And yet, those of us here in Arizona that have seen this thing for a long time know that on one hand, the Diamondbacks could throw crazy money. They did with Zach Greinke, did with Madison Bumgarner, right? Not wrong on that, am I? The other side of it is, well, we're going to build from within. That's fine. I'm all about watching Corbin Carroll. I'm all about watching these young arms. But this is Ohtani. And so when I read that the Padres are going to go in on Ohtani, why can't the Diamondbacks? Somebody explain to me, why can't they? Why can't they? And the owner's not going to say anything publicly because of tampering, but there's ways that you can communicate. Derek can go on and do his radio thing and say, we're going to be a player for every and any player from here on out. Free agency, whatever. Not we're going to explore every opportunity. That's too flimsy. We are going to be a player for every and any player that becomes available in free agency, a serious player. Okay. I mean, if you're going to throw $111 million at Corbin Carroll, something tells me you could probably figure the bank account out and figure the numbers out to go pursue Ohtani. And the return on investment would be far above $600 million, just so we're clear on that. Jersey sales alone. I just don't want to be this place where, well, we really can't do it. And then, no, let's do it. Like the Suns are doing it right now with Kevin Durant. Suns are going for it. We'll see if it works out. You're not hamstringing your organization with Ohtani, are you? Are you? The transfer portal, that Kier Crissa leaving U of A, Chance McMillan leaving Grand Canyon. Last night, I saw Air. I took my wife and I saw a screening of Air, the new Matt Damon movie that portrays Sonny Vaccaro's pursuit of Michael Jordan and Nike. It is so good. I can't go any deeper than that because we're supposed to sit on reviews. I'll just tell you. Oh. When it comes out in April, and I'm going to have Matt Damon and Sonny together on a show here in the next few weeks, you got to see it. It was really good. All right, the Professor Paula Bovin is next. I'm Brad Sussmat. All right, full disclosure, now that I have the Professor on. So the other day I'm thinking, I want to have Paula Bovin on. It's time to chop it up with the Professor. So I pull up my phone. It says, Paula, I start texting. And on the other end, I get a, sure, what time? And I said, are you okay to talk about Hurley? Of course. And all of a sudden I said, so what's the best email for you? And then I get this email back and it wasn't Paula's. I'm like, who is this? I said, it's Paula's son who works at PHNX in town. And you should be very proud of how I should screenshot you actually our conversation. And I'm just a dope. I don't know how. We've known each other for over 30 years, and I'm texting somebody I didn't even know was not you. So
that was hilarious, Brad. I don't know how that happened, but it's very funny.
It is called age. all right. So there's a lot that I want to get into with you. I want to start first with the upcoming impending, because it's been out there and discussed, layoffs at ESPN. You are sitting there teaching every day. How many students are in the bureau at Cronkite News that you oversee every day?
So this semester we have 80 students. You know, they have different days, so probably about maybe 40, 50 in one day.
And will you discuss this with them? Do they know what they're getting into? Not that it's gloom and doom. You and I have had that. But remember when I taught back in 2017 and they had mass layoffs and there were students right and left saying, I better get out of here. And it's like, no. This is the business. It's like anything else. Amazon just laid off 9,000. I'm just wondering, for those that watch this, this is really a tutorial. I hear whenever I have you on, I get parents and I get college students and aspiring journalists, high school, that want to know the real deal. So will you discuss this?
Yeah. So I honestly don't think this one came up. There was some recently with Sports Illustrated that we had talked about. I will tell you, they don't, at least this generation of, or this class of students I have, don't seem overly concerned. And the reality is, and this is, I have this conversation with parents all the time when they're coming in, we're looking at the school. There are jobs out there. There are a lot of jobs out there. They're just not the jobs that you and I grew up knowing. The reality is a lot of my students are getting into sports broadcasting, but they don't want to be local sports anchors anymore. You know, they don't necessarily want to do, Brad, what you did, you know, in your career. They want to do more what you're doing now, or they want to create content for professional teams. There are a lot of jobs out there. They just look different. And so I never feel nervous for my students finding jobs. And I mean that sincerely, because they're finding them. Most of them just look different than what we know.
Sports Illustrated put out a story this last week, the death of the local sportscaster, which I think was probably about 12 years too late.
Yes, I agree.
Yes, this has been going on for a long, long time, how it's been marginalized. And I think that what you're saying, well, I know what you're saying is to be true, because I tell people that, or interns, or even people on our team, that you can transition into other things. If you want to be in sports in any media form in this day and age, you can go drive Uber or Lyft. Mm-hmm. You can go work part-time over here or there. And you can scratch your itch with sports now. And I'm not saying you can't make it your main thing, but are you finding that too, that people can go do some other things? And this can be, I don't want to say a hobby, but a side gig that's pretty cool.
Yeah, 100%. And it's funny because I just had one of my favorite students come in this just a couple weeks ago, lives in California now, graduated a couple years ago. And for him, it was more like he didn't want the lifestyle that early in your career you often face of weekends and nights and this, but he still wanted to dabble in it. So he is now an appraiser for homes and is killing it with the amount of money he's making. And his whole staff is turning to him because he's such a good writer, and he's teaching them about the Oxford comma and how horrible it is and things like that. But he said that but he's still like doing some fantasy football writing on the side, and he finds it very fulfilling. So
good thing for Grammarly on my end. That was the greatest invention. the professor with his Paula Bovin. Yeah. I feel like I run into, when I go out and speak, I'll have a doctor who says, I hate what I'm doing. I want to do what you're doing. And I'll say, no, you need to keep doing surgery because it pays a little bit more or a lot more. Mm-hmm. And I find that with lawyers, white collar workers, people that don't want to go back into the office, they're just trying to figure it out. And I think when people watch you and I talk about it, between Paula and I, we have over 500 years. No, I'm just kidding. We have a lot of experience with this, that you can do this. The word side hustle, I wouldn't call it that, because that implies that you're in this for just the check. If you're in it for the check, get out, right?
Oh, 100%. I can attest as a journalist and a teacher. These are not high paying professions necessarily, but they're fulfilling ones.
Yeah, we enjoy ourselves quite a bit. All right, let's transition over to Bobby Hurley. So I don't know how far down the rabbit hole you want to go with this. I don't want to put your employment in jeopardy.
Okay. Sure.
but you also covered that program for a long, long time. And I've been pretty vocal about how the facility is below standard. And when the president made some comments to the state press, which good for the state press to get him talking about it, that it was, I don't want to put words in his mouth, we made it sound like it's not a big deal. Did that make you tilt your head, or were you like, come on, really?
Well, first of all, good for the state press. You know, good for student journalism, because they've come up with some great stories. So, yeah, obviously I'm paid by Arizona State. So I will, but I will be honest in how I feel about this whole situation with Hurley. And I actually tweeted something out a couple days ago, because I every once in a while I miss that column writing, not a lot, but every once in a while. And to me, it just seemed like such an obvious move with the extension. I mean, the amount of wins they got in the tournament, I know it wasn't as far as people wanted. There's not been a lot of controversy with that program as far as players getting in trouble. He runs a really clean program. He's been good to the media, which is obviously very down on the list, but it's something. And it just, I feel like he's finding his footing as a coach. And I just, it's so hard these days with transfer portals and NIL and everything else to put together a successful team. And to me, it just made so much sense. And I was very happy for ASU to see him do that and see them do that. So I thought it was a great move.
You feel the same way if the shot doesn't go in against the U of A. There's some people like, well, he beat the U of A. And I'm thinking that's 1980s thinking. You can't.
Yeah, no, I would have felt the same way. You know, I'm not all about judging people or coaches by a moment. It's more the body of work. And I just think they're in a really good place right now.
Paula Bovin with us for a few minutes. Kenny Dillingham is in day 116. Deion Sanders is big blazing stories today about 100 days of Deion, which is great. It's great for us. But what do you make out of Kenny Dillingham? And maybe the bigger picture is, you know, Arizona State Athletics was getting buried about 3-4 months ago. And all of a sudden, I feel like, okay, you have a little bit of stability here. Charlie leaves the women's basketball program. They have a really tough year, but the girls never quit. Mm-hmm. Baseball, there's going to be that group that says it's not what Jim Brock or Bobby Winkles did. Okay, we got it. But I feel like the footing of the athletic department is a little bit sturdier now than it was, let's say, November.
No, I agree. I mean, you know, with the NCAA investigation, when all that information came out, I think a lot of it is just also Dillingham setting the tone for this athletic department. He is clearly expressed how much he wanted to be here. And this is a new era of recruiting. This is a new area of how you run a football program. And it is involves being putting a lot of hot takes on social media as a coach, celebrating the people you're recruiting with, putting their jerseys, photoshopping. It is also, you know, high energy practices, which we've always seen with certain programs, but you know, they're throwing themselves out there with their enthusiasm. And as simplistic as that sounds, I think a lot of people are feeding off of that.
When you have people in the bureau go out to stories and then they come back to you because you're not out there as much, I'm not out there as much. So you and I are in different spaces, but when they come back, what are they excited about around town? What gets them going? They come back and they have that look in their eye, like, you won't believe this, or, yeah, this was really cool. What has that look in their eye, Paula?
That's a really interesting question. Well, you know, this has been, at least for us, an unbelievable semester in the Bureau, because we've had, you know, Super Bowl, we've got to cover Phoenix Open, World Baseball Classic, spring training. So they're coming back wide-eyed every day, to be honest. But you know, listen, as much as we sort of dog the NFL, anything related to the NFL, even the Cardinals with this generation, they love pro football. So there's that. I was really, really surprised how much some of them were fired up about the WBC. I tell you, the World Baseball Classic has never really been on my radar. I mean, I know it was happening, but the ability to see, you know, fans from Mexico and the way they celebrated at the games and that kind of thing, that was really interesting to me, that there's still that love of baseball if Major League Baseball can continue to find a way to reach out to the youth, because that seems to be clearly an issue with Major League Baseball. But the other thing, you know, and I shouldn't be surprised, but the era we grow up in, how much they care about women's sports, whether it's the Mercury or female athletes, or, you know, there's that great high school freshman here in town, basketball.
Jersey Robinson.
Robinson. I mean, they know her name, you know, and that they are excited about it. And the words that you describe that enthusiasm, there is not a pejorative anywhere, which, again, is what we grew up sort of seeing. That's kind of what they're excited about. And it's awesome.
Do you feel that there's times where women in sports and mental health are being pushed out by media companies late in the game just to say, see, we're doing it? Do you feel like there's some of that going on?
What do you mean? Go a little deeper with that.
I feel like that I've seen big media stay away from mental health or in sports or women in sports and not make that big of a deal out of it, because we want to make sure that we get the NFL on all the time year around. Now I feel like big media companies, and I'll use ESPN as an example, or just the NCAA women's tournament. It used to be that stuff, I shouldn't even call it like that. No. Those games would be played on Sundays. March Madness, we're going to put on the men's on Thursday, Friday. We'll put some women's games on Friday. We'll put some women's games on Sunday evening. Like, very little audience is going to sit there and watch it. But look at us. We are being inclusive. We are paying attention. And I feel as though in the WNBA, the original play-by-play voice right here, okay, said we got to do women in sports. I feel like even the WNBA is still in that space where Brittany is putting down her foot saying, I'm not flying Southwest. Mm-hmm. Let's just be clear about that. Mm-hmm. There's even people in the WNBA that I'll speak to who'll say, well, that's just the way it's going to be. Right. And I feel like, Paula, that there's this forcing at times by media to say, look at us, we are changing our tune. And it's, well, no, you're actually just filling some time.
Right.
Should I be happy that they're doing that? Should I be happy that they're trying to make it look like they're working at it when I really don't believe that they are?
Yeah, I get where you're going. And there's definitely, I feel conflicted about it. There is still some lip service and, you know, maybe doing things more for appearance than for the cause or whatever. But thank goodness that so many athletes, male and female athletes, have a voice to speak up about this. And we're seeing teams and leagues challenged on social media, and we're seeing players put themselves out there speaking about travel and things like that. So, yeah, you know, I think we're in this kind of clunky transitional time where we're trying to make things better as a sports society. We're not there yet. And there's definitely the lip service angle, but I love seeing these big organizations challenged to try to change it.
I had a front-facing talent on, I'm not going to say who, but their network was proclaiming it's the first ever NBA broadcast of all females, directors, producers. And I was told, please bring this up to this person. I brought it up and this person was like, yeah, I'm kind of tired of this always being made about, look at how different this is, just accepted. This is the way that it should be. And we really shouldn't be sitting there pointing this out. It should just be the norm.
Right.
I like that because there is this see, look at right. That. That's what I'm getting at. So,
yeah, and I get that. I think, you know, I think there's a little bit of necessity though of doing that because you want to call attention so that sort of younger females, maybe not used to seeing that somebody is bringing it to your attention that this can be the norm. But you're right. We need to get to the point where we're not just talking about it and celebrating, but it's just the norm and let's do it. I get that.
What I find is when I'm talking with, whether it's our team or students, they're kind of shocked by the stuff that you and I grew up with. Like,
right.
Really this, like Candace Parker sitting on the NCAA with men talking about basketball. That's normal.
Right.
No, it wasn't back in the day.
No, it's incredible. And I have that same experience here with our students. And you know, I may have mentioned this to you, but I remember asking Julie Fye, who was with the Suns for many years, awesome, overseeing media relations. Like, I remember going to a practice and just watching how, you know, the Devin Booker would, how he just speaks to Doris Burke or whatever, and Chris Paul, and it's so polite, and there's such mutual respect. And I was mentioning that to her, and I'm like, what? When did that change? And she said, that's all they know. They've seen women in the locker room since they got into the league and on TV. And I'm like, God, that's amazing. Not to anybody else, but to me, that was amazing.
No, back in the day, Paula and I had to be in environments where a female reporter would have a towel dropped in front of her, sometimes intentionally, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Many times.
Yeah. And, you know, you and I have talked about Oral Hershiser and how he impacted you to stick with it. And I don't think we need Oral Hershisers in this day and age. You know, it's not to demean him. It's just this is to be accepted and normal. What do you make out of the ownership stuff and the facility stuff in town? I'll get you out of here off that one. You have a new owner over there with the Suns. Monty loses his mind last night over officiating. I don't know if the owner is going to sit there and tilt his head if the Suns have a bad postseason showing. You have the Diamondbacks, again, hinting about, you know, we need a new facility. We're going to put concerts on the schedule in early October, which says to the fan base, well, they don't expect to be in the postseason. So I mean, what do you make about what's going on around town with owners?
Well, I'm excited, I think, for fans with the Suns because it's different. And we saw what happened the first day of that ownership change, you know. So I think this is kind of scary. I think right now it is for fans watching those Suns last night and losing. The bottom line is I think the Suns are going to be in fine shape, and I'm excited about the ownership change. Coyotes, you know, there's that facility issue too, and there's a big vote coming up with Tempe, so we'll see where that goes. It seems like this is the one that's going to click, but I don't know. You know, we'll see what happens there.
I use ASU as always something university. There's something with the Coyotes where it's always a new building.
Right.
It's always a new jersey. It's always a new logo. As long as they've been here, you know, it's great that Shane Doan's son is now part of the organization, but that can't be the only thing you keep pushing out there to try to get the fan base engaged. You can't.
No, I know. It does feel like a perpetual rebuild. For how many years, you know, like we're almost there kind of thing. So I guess we'll have to see there. The Diamondbacks, I know there's always facility talk. I think right now their challenge is sort of finding their identity a little bit. Who is the face of that franchise? How do we define them? I love spring training because everybody is optimistic again. And that is a great, more than any other professional sport, baseball does that to fans with spring training, the optimism. Just really wondering where that's going to go this season. I just have no idea with that team.
I wish I could tell you that I had the belief that Mr. Kendrick and Derek would say, we are going to pursue Ohtani. I wish I could say that next offseason. I know it's north of $600 million reportedly today by Buster Olney, but I don't believe that they will do that. But the other side of it is Corbin Carroll, there's not an more exciting player that I've seen come along in a while. Paula. We know in this town how much we love fresh faces.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh, I don't know if you've seen him yet, but
oh yeah,
he's so much fun, and he's a great kid.
Yeah, I know, that's exciting. That would be great if that storyline. Oh my God, Ohtani would be amazing. That final moment of the WBC, yes. Like as much hype as Ohtani gets, I don't think it's enough. I mean, the guy is Babe Ruth. It's just incredible. So I loved what he has brought to the game.
I just wish Mr. Kendrick would say something like, we're going to pursue all avenues and options. Because I know he can't say, well, sure, we're going to enter the Ohtani sweepstakes because that'd be tampering. But I wish that he would open the door to give fans hope that there's not a player that he wouldn't go after. This isn't giving Zach Greinke or Madison Bumgarner a big, bad contract like they did. This is freaking Ohtani. It's going
to as close to a sure thing as you will ever have in baseball.
Right. Anything else you want to add while I've had you on? Like, I don't know, anything else in your wheelhouse? You're like, I wish you would have asked me this because I would have hit it out of the park, or no?
You're good at asking those questions, Brad. I think we hit most of the major sports events. I'm heading up to Vegas this weekend. I'm going to, among the things I'm going to do is check out the NCAA tournament basketball. You know, it's one of my favorite things, so I'm excited about that.
Yes, I sent Paula a picture of Greg Byrne, the great athletic director at Alabama. I'm in Denver. I walk out of the tunnel and I'm with Brian Mueller and I'm visiting with the GCU president. We sit up in the bleachers for about 20 minutes just talking about the state of the program and all that. And all of a sudden this gentleman comes over and he points at me and I'm looking at him. I'm tied with Brian. I'm like, that looks like Greg Byrne. He says, come on, it is me. And so I go over and I try to shake his hand. He's had a hand injury. If you run into Greg, don't shake his hand. And I said, you know, I miss those times with you and Paula and this and that. And Paula, she's the greatest. She's so good. I said, hang on, let me get my phone out. I said, give her this. So I send this message to Paula and she sends me back something like, I'm nearly in tears or something. Like,
it was so nice. You sent me a video, you know, that was, that was really nice, Brad.
Yes. Yes.
Been
are
a
you
lot.
Gonna get back in the game in anything like what you did with college football, the CFP, or are you just going to be Professor Paula? You have a book in you?
I mean, I love being Professor Paula, but yeah. I did, like, the CFP thing was one of the greatest things that's ever happened to me. So there's another way to sort of get involved in the game that way. I may do something like that. We'll see.
I like that. I like hearing Professor Paula looking at other things. All right, get out of here. Good seeing you.
All right, Brad.
There's Paula Bovin, the professor at Cronkite News at Arizona State University. And we're back with more after this timeout. You have sports that are involved in this year's festival in a big way.
Yeah, I mean, I've always loved sports movies. Who doesn't? But this year we've got this great Yogi Berra documentary called It Ain't Over.
One of the greatest World Series resumes of any player ever.
Amazing documentary about Stephon Curry, underrated.
I'm constantly trying to find the space just to be able to survey my life.
And then this wrestling documentary about Helen, it's called Helen Believe, and she was the first woman to win the gold medal in freestyle wrestling.
The doctor said, forget about wrestling. But I'm not done yet.
So what makes you decide to go down the path of having sports movies in your film festival?
You know, ultimately, every year we want to find the best movies. And it comes down to that. But, you know, I have a sweet spot for sports movies. Between that and music movies, those are my, like, those are my sweet spots. So we always got a few of those in the mix. And, you know, it frankly just worked out perfectly with these two documentaries. I mean, Yogi Berra, I mean, is there a more quotable sports figure ever?
He said, nobody goes to that restaurant anymore. It's too crowded.
When you get to a fork in the road, take it. What?
And then Stephon Curry, what he's done, like, not on the court, not just on the court, but what he does, he and his wife, all these great things, and where he came from and where he's at is just, like, they're just perfect stories to tell.
How do you go about judging putting sports movies in the festival?
Now, these particular films, we work with studios or distributors to decide what we're going to showcase. And Apple had the Stephen Curry documentary, and they also have a Michael J. Fox documentary, which is also fantastic that we're showing. And they were interested in showcasing them, and they were just great. And the same thing with the Yogi Berra documentary from Sony Pictures Classics. It's going to be, and both these films are going to be released very soon. And so we get a little sneak preview of them before they come out in theaters.
Okay, you say you like sports. What's your favorite sports movie?
Oh, man, I gotta go Bull Durham, because it's so, like, cinematic, and it's not just a baseball movie.
Yeah.
It's so deep, the drama, and the comedy's there, and the sports is there. But, man, that relationship and the mentorship going on, there's a lot of sneaky things, and Kevin Costner looks cooler than he's ever going to look in his life in that movie. But, man, it's so good. It just gets me every time.
I saw A League of Our Own the other night, and I get choked up at the end every single time. And it's when you see Betty Spaghetti out on the diamond. How do you not love Betty Spaghetti? You not see Tom Hanks, who's just a grumpy Gus of a manager out there having some fun.
And then you have the moment where the woman finds out her husband passes at the war, and you're like, oh, they just kind of rips your heart out. But it's like, this is a great thing. You know, they're built around sports, but there's, like, the humanity in these stories. And that's what's great about these documentaries. You know, we hear about Yogi Berra. We know about, like, all the things that he's done on the field and all his quotes, but you get to hear more about him as a man and what he did in his life. And the same with Steph Curry. I mean, I feel like, in my mind, Stephen Curry might be the greatest shooter ever. No offense, Larry Bird, but man, as soon as he comes across the court, you got to guard him. You know what I mean? Like, he could pop it up from half court with no effort. And so, like, to see that, but then also see where he came from growing up and, like, his relationship with his wife. Like, you get to see, like, the human side of these people, which is really cool.
And I think about everything.
The third documentary, if you could walk me through that a little bit.
Oh, sure. It's about Helen Believe. She was a freestyle wrestler. She did some of her training here. She was involved in the Sunkiss Kids, the wrestling group. And so this kind of shows, like, what she did. And how, like, her success and kind of what she's done afterwards. And that was in Rio 2016 when she won that gold medal. And there's a lot of local connections. And we picked up that film because one of the producers produced a documentary in 2021 that won our best documentary. And so he's like, hey, I have this new film. And we took a look at it. And I'm like, oh, it's a great fit. We should do something special and big with it. And so that's kind of where that one came about.
If people want to come to the film festival, how do they go about it?
You know, the first place you start is our website. You go to phoenixfilmfestival.com. There's a thing for films, and there's a whole schedule you can kind of hover over. You can click on things, watch trailers. We have 275 screenings, so it's a little, it's a little overbearing, you know. But and some people like the hard program catalog. We have those at our office. You can flip through that, 72 pages of what you should do and what you can see. And we have parties and seminars, workshops. It's just a great place for movie lovers.
Anything else you want to add? I haven't asked you.
You know, I think the aspect of having filmmakers at the festival, and that's what kind of separates a film festival from just going to the movies. You know, you have a filmmaker there, like, for example, for the Stephen Curry movie, Peter Nix, the director of that documentary, will be here. And so we'll talk about it afterwards. And so it's cool to watch the films and then, like, learn about how they made them and learn about why they made them. And we have so many films, probably 70, 80% of our films have filmmakers representing coming in from all over the world.